Hello everyone, you're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
Accepting yourself just as you are. With this body, with this appearance, these behaviors, these life circumstances, the most reassuring lines from the Zen tradition was written by Zen Master Dogen. And it goes like this. To be in harmony with the oneness of things is to be without anxiety about imperfection. I love this teaching because it assumes imperfection. It assumes that these bodies and minds will be reactive, that we'll grasp and get attached, and that we'll be angry at times and fearful, and that we'll even hurt the beings that we love the most out of our fear and our confusion. It assumes imperfection and says what matters is how do we relate to that? But when we feel deficient, and when we're aware of that deficiency, there's a real sense of shame, and that shame ties us up in knots. And it gives rise to the most profound sense of self-aversion. And what this means is that for awakening beings of our time, people on the spiritual path, that paying attention to shame, paying attention to self-aversion, is a necessary gateway for awakening. It's not something to get rid of. Rather, the way we pay attention to self-aversion is actually the ground of the path. Imperfection. to be numb or uncaring, just simply without anxiety, accepting yourself just as you are.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to America Meditating Radio. That was Tara Brock from Monique Rhodes' Heartbeat. I'm your host, Sister Jenna, and Happy New Year, looking at 2018 as a year of amplified awareness, amplified awakening, amplified truthfulness, an amplified kind of transparency of our presence and our personality, but also an amplified form of finding a lot of courage to charter through unknown territories. Perhaps we have been here before. Perhaps our relatives or our grandparents or ancestors have been through times like this before, where we might say we've never witnessed such a time period before. And I think the reason what makes this a little bit different than previous eras, where there is tremendous amount of uncertainty and perhaps a breaking down of morals and ethics and values, we generally know that the demise of every nation or every country is when the values of the people really go down, when it becomes a deteriorating form of values where our innate universal values are replaced by acquired values. So I speak in terms of maybe my value would be respect, that I respect all despite whatever their decisions might be in life. And I compromise the value of respect that someone who does something horrifying, I can justify it and go, there's no way I can respect that person. That person should, you know, get the death sentence or should go to jail or should definitely suffer the consequence of that. And so it's like I replace my innate universal value with a sort of acquired one, which somehow hurts my own spirit from being truthful, authentic, godlike. And so this is the age I feel 2018 beyond is really going to call us to investigate our intentions, our motives. We're going to be called to investigate more who we are and why we're here and how best can we deal with criticism, judgment, ego, fear, greed, atrocities, deception. How best can we deal with that? Do we come out as if we're mirroring back what we're so frustrated about, or do we mirror to it saying, you know what, there's actually a better way that we could actually do this. Here, let me show you, or let me offer an example of that. Let me hope that my life will be the message that I'm trying to communicate through my words, just through my behavior and through my power of choice. So if you're feeling it like many have shared with me, and even I myself, just a deep sense of truthfulness and transparency and honesty with the spirit, with your own soul, it's an awakened time for your conscience to be awakened. Our conscience is looking for our attention, for us to be at a level of divinity and grace. And it seems as if every second and every moment we're going to be tested. So even if we fail at a particular encounter or situation where we felt like, wow, that I didn't come from a higher place, then just hold tight. You know, the destiny and the drama will definitely offer us more opportunities to be able to move with more grace and divinity and spaciousness. Stay tuned. We're going to be having a conversation with Dr. Pilar Jennings, and she's authored a new book, which we would like to talk about, called Mixing Minds. And we're going to do what we do best here at the America Meditating Radio. Take a moment to pause and let things go, to find a more deeper centered place of coming from our, you know, the way we think and feel. We've got to come from a more dignified, noble, virtuous person who's got mastery over their emotions, truthful mastery, not mastery out of the ego or fear or insecurity or superiority, but a mastery that's based on the narrative and the cycle and the practice of a human being that's been modeling choices and ways of behaving with respect and values and virtues and purity and care for the well-being of other people. So life continues. You make big investments, you write books, you produce albums, you direct movies, you take care of your family, you help individuals who are down. But the attention now is in what way? In what way do we show what's at the base of the soul's capacity, the soul's worth? Here's the power to let go. Meditation from off the grid into the heart. Enjoy.
Take in this moment. I, the soul, settle gently inside, behind my eyes, as I continue this journey in time. I am not the body. I am not my attachments. And I am not my material world around me. But as I settle further within the soul, I am powerful. With the power to let go, I am able to release the negative thoughts and memories that I find myself still holding on to. I recognize that the past is the past, and to bring any of it into the present is to limit my fortune for the future. Instead, I, the soul, remain positive, light, and true. I'm free from burdens or worries, trusting that with the power to let go, new experiences and beautiful experiences are attracted to me. I am greatly fortunate.
Welcome back. That was The Rose from Kristen Hoffman, and which you can get on iTunes or Amazon. Hope you enjoyed the letting go meditation. That was from Correction Off to Work meditation CD by yours truly, Sister Jenna. Today we welcome Pilar Jennings, PhD. She's a psychoanalyst in private practice with a focus on the clinical applications of Buddhist meditation. Dr. Jennings has been working with patients and their families through the Harlem Family Institute since 2004, and she is a visiting lecturer at Union Theological Seminary and a guest lecturer at Columbia University. Dr. Jennings is also the author of Mixing Minds, and her newest release, To Heal a Wounded Heart, The Transformative Power of Buddhism and Psychotherapy in Action. Today we welcome Dr. Pilar Jennings to America Meditating Radio. Happy New Year, Dr. Jennings.
Happy New Year to you, Sister Jenna. It's good to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. Your new book, To Heal a Wounded Heart, is talking about, or at least it's taking us on an unconventional path in therapy. Particularly, it's about a six-year-old who was your patient and had stopped talking. Could you give us a brief overview of the situation and the kind of therapy that you use, which actually seemed to have worked?
Sure. So this new book, To Heal a Wounded Heart, is about my first experience being a psychoanalyst. And I wrote it with the awareness that I was bringing to the work my own history of human struggle and the challenge, especially of childhood. And so the work that I was doing with this particular child was a psychoanalytic form of healing. But I was also, just by nature of having practiced meditation throughout my childhood and early adulthood, folding that into the work in ways that felt right for this particular child and this particular treatment.
And what was it that you learned from even observing that whole process?
Well, I think I learned quite a bit about certainly the healing process of psychotherapy and psychoanalysis, mm-hmm. but more broadly about the human journey, especially of traversing childhood, and my growing appreciation that all of us, I think, regardless of our social location, the forms of privilege and protection that might be offered to some, will suffer in childhood. And
right.
I was really coming to appreciate this has a lot to do with how deeply we love,
mm-hmm.
but how we will invariably experience loss as we love, and that this is often most acute in childhood.
Right, right. Now, trauma is a large topic, and there are many different types of trauma. Could you offer our listeners like a slight overview, like a general definition, so we can all be kind of on the same page? Because there are varying degrees of trauma, I believe. Or would you say that trauma is just trauma?
Well, there are certainly many different types of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Trauma, generally speaking, could be described as any overwhelmingly stressful experience that overwhelms our existing coping mechanisms. And so that could be something extreme, like an accident or unexpected serious illness. But it could also be those so-called micro moments in childhood where there's a sense of not quite being emotionally found by a caretaker, and the sense of being overwhelmed by that experience again and again.
I'm just even thinking about my own experiences of maybe loss, or sometimes it's just so much at an emotional level. It's not even just physical. It's just something that impacted my consciousness, which I've recorded in a story, and I've believed in that story so much that sometimes unknowingly every decision that I might make is coming from a little bit of that place of trauma. Have you felt that to be a overall truth? Because some of us do find it hard to let go of things that weren't pleasant.
Yeah, no, I so appreciate that insight, because
mm-hmm.
with trauma, there's invariably needed protective defenses that develop. right? Mm-hmm. There's a part that picks up steam that says, I will never be hurt in this way again. And often there is a protective story that goes with it, right? If I'm too exposed, I'll be hurt. Or if I'm too known, people will see things about me that aren't lovable and I'll be hurt.
Right.
And so the story can get very powerful but also very rigid. And while it's initially protective, just as you're pointing out, Sister Jenna, invariably it mitigates against getting what's needed in order to have new and healing experiences.
Mm-hmm. I get that. In your book, you describe your upbringing, and as different as you are from your mother, which I am to mine too, it seems as though she had a great impact on your out-of-the-box approach, especially to this therapy that you've developed. Could you share a little bit about your mother, the impact she had on you, and maybe your father? Did he influence you to get on your professional path?
Yeah, both of my parents influenced me a great deal. I think that that's true for many of us, or whomever was taking care of us when we were babies and developing into childhood. Those relationships are so influential. They're so impactful. And both of my parents influenced my sense of what's meaningful. Mm-hmm. They're both very curious people, and we had a lot of conversation about politics and history and psychology and art. And so pretty early on, I was learning from them that one way to approach life is to be deeply curious. And so that seemed to be a bit of a guiding principle as I was growing. And when I became interested in becoming a clinician, I felt that original training to be very resonant with good clinical work, where I could lead with that curiosity in each treatment and slowly learn about each person I had the privilege of working with.
Beautiful, beautiful. It's so nice to have parents that really guide us on our journey, whether they are consciously aware of it or not. Buddhism is your path of practice, so to speak. And in your book, you seem to suggest that each tradition, Buddhism and psychotherapy, for example, is made stronger by being in conversation with the other. Why do you think so?
Well, that has something to do with what I've experienced as a patient, as I was training to become a therapist. I had my own experience being in therapy as the patient. And at that time, I was already deeply influenced by Buddhism and Buddhist meditation, and I was very aware that I was a spiritual being. And so my spirituality was invariably a part of my experience in therapy. Mm. And as I was training, I was appreciating again and again that a lot of my experience in spirituality and specifically in Buddhism was helping me to be a better therapist. And I was often thinking about all of the compassion training, for instance, that's so central in all the great world's religious traditions and is not really a part of psychotherapeutic training. You know, one hopes that therapists will naturally be compassionate with their patients, that they'll intuitively feel a sense of connection, of being a fellow traveler. But it really isn't a part of formal training to tap into deeper resources of spaciousness and openness and receptivity to one's patient. So that's just one example of how I was beginning to see that these traditions really needed each other. And from the psychoanalytic side, I was finding such a respect for everything we go through in early life that I wasn't finding in the Buddhist tradition.
Right.
And again, I was seeing that my spiritual practice was enhanced by a deepening appreciation for how complicated childhood is. and how much we go through and try to work out later in life and often in our spiritual practice.
You know, Dr. Jennings, you look at the current times and you're almost, I mean, we can sometimes sense to be vulnerable is to be weak. We're looking at a culture of bullying, a culture of aggressiveness, a culture of really not listening to the hearts of people in the country. I know that there's a conversation that's been going on perhaps in the last year and a half about people that have been forgotten in this country. I don't believe it. I think it's a language, sort of a genocide that's taking place. But in your book, you talk about the risk of vulnerability. And you suggest that being vulnerable is actually what makes us human. Can you speak a little bit more about this? Why it can feel too risky to be vulnerable with others? Does the practice of Buddhism or psychotherapy have anything to say about this? Because in my own sense, I don't necessarily consider I need to give my vulnerability permission. I think for me, I give my truthfulness permission that I'm truthfully just being in this place right now, but that's not where I'll always be, or this is not how I'll always feel. And somehow within my expression of being truthful at that time from my soul, there's such a strength, Dr. Jennings. It's like no one can offend me. It's like, but that's who and how I'm feeling. So, you know, Om Shanti is what we say in Raja Yoga meditation. Speak to us a little bit more about your take on vulnerability.
Sure. This is an issue that interests me greatly because I have found, again, through my studies, through my clinical experience, and through my personal experience, that we are, by our very nature, profoundly vulnerable. And, of course, it's easier to see that when we have a look at infancy, right, at the beginning of our life journey. We can recognize that vulnerability, right? Babies are not in any way viable without somebody else who's actively invested in helping them survive, right? So we see how acutely vulnerable we are early in life. I think, though, the reality is that vulnerability is with us throughout the life journey by nature of being embodied, right, by nature of needing others so profoundly.
Mm-hmm.
For most of us, we need others for our food, right, for our basic resources, and even for our sense of reality. We do need others to recognize us, right? I mean, when we're in radical isolation, most of us will truly decompensate because we are at our core relational beings.
Right.
And I know what you're saying. You're an extremely developed being who's really tapping into very deep resources of truth, of clarity, of spaciousness that you're able to experience, right, directly experience. And I would say as we arrive at that place, we really need others to help us recognize those resources. And we, most of us, not all of us, but many of us live in a culture that wants to reinforce that it's best to be highly individualistic, highly independent, that that's the most esteem-enhancing way to be. But it really rubs up against reality because without others, we aren't viable. And I believe that that's true until our last breath. And so in my book, I find myself just musing on this theme again and again. It's really about the truth of our interdependence.
And that
the more we can open to it, right, the less ashamed we are of our need of others, you know, our need to feel safely in connection with others. But if we've been badly hurt, you know, and especially early in life, that vulnerability can feel entirely too risky. And we can organize all of our defenses against it. But again, it makes it hard to feel known, to feel understood, to feel seen on a very basic level without that vulnerability in place.
And we're in such a culture of wanting to be seen. You know, it's not even wanting to share our best with others, as it's not that important. We're more just want to be seen. And I think it's so much of a stereotype or a connection that if I'm seen, I'm loved or I'm valued or I'm recognized. And the question is, well, do you love your, do you see you? Have you valued you? Have you acknowledged you? Because you can't wait for the world to give you that. And if they do, it's still superficial because you still have to live with your own truth. It's such a profound time, Dr. Jennings. Hey, are you going on any book tours? Are there any upcoming events approaching?
There are, yeah. I'll be speaking at Rizzoli Bookstore on Wednesday, January 17th, in New York City on Broadway, and be happy to see listeners that evening. And then I'll be in San Francisco in February at Book Passage on February 8th.
Beautiful. Any idea about, any thoughts about you coming to D.C.?
I'd love to come to D.C. we'll have to work that out.
Please do.
It's an area that I appreciate very much.
Well, let us know when you are coming. We'd love to host you at the museum. Well, leave us with a website, and thank you so much for joining us, and make 2018 one of your very best.
Thank you so much, Sister Jenna. It's been a true pleasure to be with you. My website is drpilarjennings.com, and I want to thank you for this conversation and this opportunity to usher in the new year with healing and clarity.
Mm-hmm. Me too. All the very best, Pilar. Take
and
care.
And to you. Thank you,
Sister
Jenna.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So do your research, everyone. Understand that there is so much with the body, with the mind, with our whole being. And Dr. Pilar Jennings shared that with us very beautifully. Do look out for her book, To Heal a Wounded Heart, The Transformative Power of Buddhism and Psychotherapy in Action. And her website is drpilarjenningswith2n.com. I want to give a big shout out to a new addition to our family. Mira and Viraj Patel gave birth to a beautiful little girl whose name is Miraj, because it's the name of their both of the family members. And so I'm sending so much love and so much light to that special angel that has re-entered the story of life to offer what I can guarantee will be love, wisdom, and purity, because her family are such. Remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission, and we are here to love each other the same. So let's do that. Here's Joe Robb, one of our local hip-hop entertainers in Washington, D.C., on Wake Up.
Struggles, debated over twist of fate. Got the world up on your shoulders, fear you can't escape. Ain't nobody in your corner, what you gonna do? Keep a truck or keep a punch, your life's sick and move. Don't let it break you, motivate you, make it work for you. Cause you the number one stunner, you know what to do. You gon' keep knocking at these doors and knock, knock, knock and say you're knocking on.